What can compare with the thrill of a brand new bike?
Welcome to the Sprock Creek Podcast, where we simplify the good life. I'm Guthrie Straw.
And I'm Steph Rouse, broadcasting from the People's Republic of Portland, nestled in the heart of Cascadia.
We are the show that brings you somewhat irreverent conversations about the intricacies of thinking locally, with a global perspective, and enjoying the best that life has to offer along the way.
Covering bicycling, trains and transit, and simpler living. And today, cycling cleverly with Eva Fraser, co-owner of Clever Cycles.
Welcome, welcome.
Hi.
How are you doing?
Hi, that's me.
So, Eva, tell us a little bit about what you're doing these days.
Well, currently I'm having a really delicious cider in an old building covered in moving blankets, and it's kind of amazing in here. Like, I don't know what radio looks like until now.
Yeah.
For my day job, I work with bicycles, which is pretty much like every Portlander's dream job, I think, besides just being creative and drinking and sitting under the sun. But honestly, like Clever Cycles, we're into all things bicycle. We really love kickstands and dynamo lighting and kids on bikes, really anyone on bikes. But we're trying to get the future population on bicycles, just one little butt at a time.
There you go.
Right? I don't know if y'all have been in lately. What are your impressions of what is Clever Cycles?
Well, I mean, 2 weeks ago, so I had had my helmet stolen about a month ago. No.
Who does that?
Ago. You know, I'm hoping, that's a good question. I'm hoping that it was someone who lives in Vancouver and was afraid that they were going to get a ticket.
Sure.
And had just had their helmet stolen. I'm just hoping that they enjoy
right.
the helmet that they got. But also it was a good excuse to level up my helmet. So I went in and I'd gone to like three different bike shops because I had seen, this is about a 2 minute story. Sorry.
No, this is fantastic.
Okay, great.
I'll sip my cider.
Yeah.
and so I went because I had seen on Megan Sinnott's a Facebook profile this picture of a Nutcase helmet because she's the product designer for Nutcase. They had this helmet of the Portland flag, and I was like, well, if I am going to get a new helmet, I am going to get the Portland flag is going to be on my head.
Did you get the Portland flag?
So hold on.
Okay. I'm jumping ahead of our story here.
No, this is great because the suspense is building that. So I went to, you know, a couple of different shops and I was like, hey, do you have the Portland flag Nutcase helmet? And they're like, no. And I go into Nutcase and there's Anna and Nina and I'm like, hey, so do you guys have the Portland flag Nutcase helmet? And they're like, what are you even talking about right now? And I was like, oh, well, I saw it on someone's. I could have sworn. And they were like already Googling it. They were trying to like, we haven't seen it. But man, if it's in Metro Ride, that'll actually fit my head.
Oh, yeah.
It just kept going around. And it turns out so. And I was like, well, I thought, oh, I saw it on Megan's. She's a product designer. Yeah. What if it's just a prototype? No. And so so I was texting her and messaging her. And they were going up on the website, and so it turns out it's the 2016
yep.
line.
Oh. Yeah.
So we
You're
got very
way
excited.
Too hip.
No, it was just that moment that I'm just like, oh, and I'm like, well, I'm glad I didn't hold out because my noggin needs to be protected, or I would like to have my noggin protected. And yeah, so that was the last time. It was about 3 weeks ago.
What was your second choice?
Oh, my second choice was it's over in the corner. It's
oh, got, look at
it's
that.
Like the cute little like oh, nice. 70s bowling.
It. Yeah, I like yeah. that one.
Yep. So now I'm embarrassed. I can't remember what that pattern's called, but I should know what that pattern's called.
I just call
Kevin,
it 70s bowling.
Kevin, my
couture.
Rep's gonna be like,
we could put the answer in the show notes.
Oh like. Yeah, just kind of slip it in.
So if you are interested in tracking down, there is one copy of that helmet that lives here in Portland. So for the World Naked Bike Ride, when Megan was leading it with Evan, Evan had
there?
The Portland helmet. So
so you guys both know about it.
We do. I only know of it because he's the owner of the shop I work
Can
at.
Can you show me a picture?
Oh, yeah, sure.
I don't
yeah.
have the Google.
That's
oh,
okay.
Currently.
I will do the Google. And in fact, a couple days later, we tagged Nutcase Helmet and Clever Cycles in the
Rad.
In the picture.
Nice.
Because, you know,
on,
everyone
on
was
all
very
of
excited.
The social media platforms.
Oh, yeah. It was on. So we're hoping next year I want Roman Mars from Radiotopia. Or 99% Invisible and Radiotopia to come and join Nutcase Helmet and Clever Cycles on a Vexillology ride during Pedalpalooza. That's my dream.
Good goals.
Maybe we can find the helmet and post it for our listeners today.
Ooh, yeah.
We'll put it on the Sprocket podcast notes.
Oh, man. Deep into Twitter.
There we go. When was the last time you were in, Guthrie?
Oh, yes. I have seen this.
So the last time I was in was about, I think, last week. Yeah, just about last week. I've been in a lot these days.
You're a familiar face.
Or a familiar voice. I'm not sure. One of the two. Maybe I should put my face on the show notes. Who knows? Actually, that's probably a terrible idea.
Yeah, I should speak only in voices.
Exactly. Yeah, I was in last week, the week before. As the listeners may or may not have figured out by now, Aaron and Brock aren't even here, so we're hosting a guest podcast for them this week.
We just stole the keys to the building.
Oh, yes.
They're in an undisclosed location.
Aaron left his email logged in. We've got all the access we need. Life is good.
I actually lent him, or he sort of paid for a bicycle to go, he borrowed a Brompton to go to Montana.
Oh, nice.
To somebody's quinceañera, maybe?
Okay.
Something like that. Mm-hmm. So, party. Big party.
Nice.
It's like I sort of paid for it. It's like that can also be called theft. So
he left his credit card in the shop?
Deal.
Oh, okay.
Nice. He's a friend of the shop. So
nice.
Yeah.
So you're now a co-owner
Indeed.
Of Clever Cycles, but that's not how you started at Clever.
Indeed.
So
I started as a lowly mechanic.
No
such not thing. Not lowly at all, really.
You mean the person who saves your bacon when
things
go awry.
Yeah. I am that girl. I still do that even. But I started at Clever. I was working at REI and I received a phone call from Jeremy, who works at the shop. Maybe you know him. He said, "Hey, do you want to get out of there?" And I was kind of like, yeah, I do.
Were you in the bike department at REI?
I was working in the shop at REI, which is a great place for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And then you want to move on and do different things, right? So he said, "Okay, bring in your resume like right now." And so I was like, "Whoa." So I brought in my resume. And I guess being a female mechanic is an anomaly. Which, yes, this is true, but I also feel that's a bit odd. Why aren't there more women working on bikes? Hey, guys, in the internetosphere, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe y'all should get into that.
Yeah.
So I started as a mechanic, and I've been there 5 years probably now, and just happenstance brought me into ownership. I do the buying, so I order your nutcase helmet.
Thank you.
Which is why I should know what that pattern is called.
Eh.
And I do a little mechanicing, a little whatever, answering mm-hmm. the phone, paying the bills, whatever needs doing.
Why aren't there more women as mechanics, do you think?
This is a good question. Stereotypes are really hard to break down, I think. We see that in so many things. So it's going to take time, but it's also going to take women who want to be bike mechanics
mm-hmm.
to kind of break into it. So honestly, I don't have a simple answer.
It's not a simple question.
Oh, that's a good question.
Asker.
We're here to ask
you.
No.
I will turn that around on you.
Did you find that getting hired on to REI was mm-hmm. a difficult process in that regard because of that stereotype? Because I know that they usually train through Barnett, so when you got hired on.
So I will say I snuck in the back door
into
the shop at REI. I was hired on as sales staff, right? And then I just had to show a lot of interest and a lot of drive and kind of be annoying to get into the shop because I really wanted to, get my hands dirty and take things apart and put them back together. And I guess I had sort of a mentor that said, "Okay, you're cool. We'll let you in." So I started by bike building there, which was, 7 a.m. to 2 p.m. just building bikes all day.
Yep.
Which is great. It's a good way to get to know, develop your inner wrist torque wrench and other such things that you need to be a mechanic. Get your fingernails dirty. But so I guess it takes you being determined, and then it takes other people kind of accepting you and pulling you into the fold.
Yep.
So
For anyone that's interested talking about the subject of getting women into bike mechanics, if you are employed at a shop in any capacity, there's a really great scholarship which is put out by QBP each year that will give you a free ride if you get through the application process for the bike school which we have here in Portland. And I'm totally
UBI.
I was like, I know this name.
It's a thing.
I've said it before. Yeah, UBI. United Bicycle Institute, I believe. So,
Sounds good.
If you are a female listener and you're listening, check that out. It usually happens in the winter each year. So good one to take a look at.
Yeah. No, I think that's a good way to encourage more women to get into it if finances are an issue. I also think that shops, like, honestly, we don't get very many applicants that are female. Hmm. And that's, it makes it really hard to hire women when women aren't applying. Huh. So... I don't know where the disconnect is.
Hmm.
Either people, I've heard that women don't have as much confidence when they don't have as much knowledge. And so maybe men who are applying are like, oh yeah, I'm really good at that. When in fact they are not. And maybe there are plenty of women that are more qualified that aren't applying because they don't think they're as qualified.
Mm.
But I'm sure there's a lot of gender politics that I'm speaking to that I know nothing about.
Hey, that's okay.
I mean,
we're all a voice.
Right.
I mean, yeah, it's a huge, sure. I mean, doctoral thesis.
Sure. Oh, so, exactly. And so, I did not write that doctoral thesis.
So are there bikes that roll in, when they roll in, you're just like, not that one. Like, are there any bikes that you're like, I would love not to be working on that particular kind of bike?
Yes. And, there are plenty of things where you're just like, I really don't want to work on that, but we're kind of the shop that works on those bikes, though. Mm-hmm. That's the thing, is we don't really turn people away. We get plenty of the, like, I just went to bike gallery and they told me to come here.
Oh,
like,
okay,
well, I'm not going to turn you away also.
And also, thanks to bike gallery, like, sweet.
Yeah, thanks for sending us some business, dudes. they like, don't want to deal with kids' seats and, I don't know, internal hub gears are kind of our shtick. Roller brakes, like, who knows what roller brakes are. Drum brakes.
Yep, absolutely.
And things that are really heavy. That's our thing.
You're
but
like,
yeah,
just
I
let
definitely
me get it on the
I
stand.
Still like there are certain bikes that I've worked on before where I see them come back and I'm like, oh no, what happened this time?
I feel like there's always there's that quintessential bike where you're like, I know this was fixed when I went out, but hey, look, it's broken again.
Yeah, or you know, it's just it's just at a certain age where every bolt is starting to get to the point where it's been tightened and loosened so many times that the next time you tighten it, it's going to strip.
Yep.
And you're like,
yeah. So do you feel like as a shop, Clever Cycle? So I know there's like, and I work at Cycle Portland in downtown. For our shop, like we're also in the realm of like, let's try to make it work. And like we go towards the spectrum of like, we're going to educate and say like, this will probably work. You can spend $20 on it, but if it breaks again, just to let you know, we told you. Do you think that Clever Cycles is towards the spectrum of like make it work, or do you find it's easier to recommend like here's the fix? This is brand new and it's going to work for a while.
Well, usually, so we don't sell used parts.
Oh, okay.
So I'm not going to recommend a used part. You know, sometimes something will come in and I'll be like, well, I can make it work for now, and you'll be back here in 6 months to a year, or maybe you're never coming back because you're going to go buy another bike. But. We try not to put the customer out too much, but sometimes it's worth saying, hey, if you spend $100, your bike's going to be way better now. And a lot of people are riding every day to commute to and from work, and they don't want to have a mechanical on the way to work next week. Like, it's worth it to them to spend the extra $50 to fix it.
Yeah, absolutely.
So,
or you get that wheel in that you true the first two times, and by the third time you're like, look, it's probably just time to get a new wheel.
I'm going to build you a new one, and it's going to be awesome, and it's going to be $300, and they're kind of like, yeah, okay.
But I'll see you again in 14 years.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. Yeah. When you've worn through your rim.
Yep, absolutely.
Right. You know, so we were talking earlier about, you know, the bike gallery sending folks to you at Clever, and you feel like in Portland we have a bit of an embarrassment of riches in terms of bike shops. Like you're a retailer for cargo bikes, but you're not the only cargo bike retailer, and you retail e-bikes, but you're not the only e-bike retailer.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, within this burgeoning developing ecosystem of bike shops in Portland. What are the collaborative elements that you see, and what are the competitive elements that you see?
I think we're always kind of refinding our footing in that field of competition and camaraderie. I think...
You don't need to name names.
Oh, no, I'm not going to name names. I don't care. Like, I think everyone could be riding a bicycle, and so we don't need to be competition with each other, right? If every bike shop doubled their sales and we put a bunch of car dealerships out of business, that would be rad.
Nice.
I mean, not for the people who are working at the car dealerships. Like, I understand that that there's an economy around this, but... You know, I think there are plenty of people still driving and not riding.
So that was something I was also wondering about, was because of the types of bikes that Clever specializes in, what do you think it would take to actually make that happen? Because I know you have a lot of bikes for families. People are looking to have that more active lifestyle.
Sure.
And that's a bit of like a buzzword, but more so like, how do we get more people on bikes, make people feel comfortable about Portland? Because I think... you know, you see a lot of bikes that are the Bockfeets around town. And mm-hmm. if I just butchered that, I apologize. I've never actually heard somebody say it.
Bockfeets.
There we go. Thank you.
It means box bike in
there
Dutch.
There we go. So with those types of bicycles, do you think that for the infrastructure that we have now, we're getting close to saturation? Or do you think that there's still some room to go for that infrastructure?
I think there's a lot of stigma around bicycling as a lifestyle. And I think maybe we need to get rid of that word lifestyle and say... This is transportation. Mm. You know, you don't need to be a bike person mm-hmm. to ride a bicycle.
Yep.
And that's what our mantra is, I think, more than anything. And so for some people, weather is a big leap to get over the however many months of rain we have, depending on the year. And some people, it's like, oh, I have this crazy hill. Oh, I've got six kids. Oh, I've got to carry this, that, and the other thing all the way to Beaverton and back. Like, there are plenty of things where cars are very useful and more practical for people. Mm-hmm. So I don't think we're going to get everybody on a bicycle.
True. Yeah, I guess, but just more to increase what the mode share already is.
Or... Yeah, but I think the infrastructure is great, and we're getting to this point where it's safer to ride a bike, I think. I mean, I honestly take a lot of back streets because I think that's safer than sometimes like riding up Williams at rush hour.
Yep.
is terrifying.
Hashtag North Williams death trap. Don't go to Twitter and look at that.
Okay.
Or I
will when I get home. I think there's a lot of room for more people to get on bikes if they're not like, oh, I don't have to wear weird shoes mm-hmm. or spandex.
Yeah,
or
that perception.
Or even a helmet. Like, maybe the fact that everyone yells at you if you're not wearing a helmet is bad. Hmm. Like, why is bicycling so unsafe and mm-hmm. driving is safe? But I see so many people dying in cars. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, yes, people are dying on bicycles too, but not in the same numbers. We've stopped reporting about cars.
Do you think that's sort of a U.S. versus, like, European divide, though, like the helmet issue? Because I think that in societies... and I'm thinking of the Netherlands in particular,
sure. Yeah.
Because of the culture that has evolved around that. Like, yeah, for sure. Why would you wear a helmet? Like, that's
right.
Silly. but maybe in Portland or maybe in some other cities for listeners here in the U.S., that might seem like a bit more of a dicey proposition, or at least at face value there.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. It's a cultural thing for sure that people grew up having a law saying you need to wear a helmet. Mm-hmm. And then it becomes this stigma where if you're not wearing a helmet, you're maybe a bad person. Because I see that with parents telling their children, like, oh, no, that girl isn't wearing her helmet. Mm-hmm. Hand on hip.
That's right.
Harumph. I'm trying to do all of the verbal things that I'm doing with
my
body.
Thank you for describing that. It was like,
I'm like, oh, no one's going to see my hand on my hip.
But now they know.
And my grumpy face.
Well, but also, what is the number one injury in a car crash? I mean, it's head trauma.
Right. Maybe those drivers should be wearing helmets.
There was a driver's helmet created in...
I've got to get me one of those.
Yeah, it wasn't sweet. Like, the only time I've ever actually been pulled over, I happened to have my helmet on at the time, and I was driving my dad's car, and he was like, I was like, oh, I don't actually drive that often. Like, could you tell me which is the license and registration? He was like, yeah, I kind of could tell you're wearing your helmet. But I was like, well, safety first.
Yeah.
But honestly, I
was
mean.
Was this like a motorcycle kind of helmet?
It was my bicycle helmet. It was just, I just hadn't taken it off.
I think that's very responsible. Like, helmets are comfortable. In college, I used to go to class and they're 45-minute periods. So, like, why not wear your helmet the whole class?
Right.
So I'm just going to be outside to bike to the next one.
Yeah,
so.
think of how much time you're saving.
Exactly.
You know? But
and if the building falls.
But also, I mean, we wear helmets for things that are identified as dangerous, that we have opted into a certain danger factor. And if we – this is – sorry, my small soapbox.
No, I like this.
That if we have legislated, or if we have, you know, socially policed people – not to say – so my mom is a trauma nurse. Mom, I always wear my helmet. Okay, so
my mother-in-law also. So.
Yeah, you're like, well, how are you? And I was like, well, you know what? It's okay. I'll just say that I'm wearing my helmet, and I will actually wear my helmet, just so I don't, you know, if I get into a crash, I won't have that as part of the public service announcement of that crash that she wasn't wearing a helmet. Like, that's honestly, that's a good part of the reason why I wear my helmet. It's just so I won't get that little.
You don't want to be the PSA.
I don't want to be that person, but. But at the same time, like, we do things when we – anything else that has a helmet associated, it's an opt-in risk. It's considered close to an extreme sport, right? And so people are not surprised if an activity that requires a helmet and or a waiver – usually those go together. It doesn't in cycling. It does in most things mm-hmm. that require a helmet. Then – you shouldn't – like, I think the general intimation, societal intimation, is that you should not be surprised and you should not search around beyond yourself for blame for any injury that's caused to you. And I think that there's a subtlety around helmet policing in American society that treats cycling as a dangerous enough activity regardless of – what the actual statistics show in mm-hmm. terms of overall traffic crashes, including pedestrian traffic mm-hmm. crashes. So I was the former executive director of Oregon Walks. Like, the amount of pedestrian crashes mm-hmm. Are significant. I am not saying.
You don't want to walk around wearing a helmet.
Yeah, it's like, you know, putting on your reflective vest. It's like, okay, honey, I'm going to mm-hmm. go outside and I'm going to get the mail. Hope to see you in 10 minutes. But anyway, so that's... that's my hypothesis and my soapbox about helmeted.
Sure.
We can go.
I mean, my impression is, what if bicycling was perceived as safer, hence people not wearing helmets? Would more people ride bicycles if it was perceived as safer, like walking?
I would even think they would, because that's just removing, I think, like, barriers to entry.
But
basically.
Then there are so many people who are yelling and screaming at their computers right now, like, why are you telling people not to wear helmets? Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's fine. Like, wear a helmet if you want to wear a helmet. I think that's fantastic. Mm. Like, yes, they've been proven to help whatever they've been proven to help, right?
Sure. But at the same time, there's a certain preemptive blame on you should be wearing your helmet versus we have a greater duty of care to anyone who is on the road.
Why don't we drive safer and not run into people that are mm-hmm. riding bicycles?
That's right.
And we had talked a little bit about Vision Zero, at least in terms of Portland, on the last episode as well. So I think that, yeah, it's definitely an issue which is on the forefront, I think, of Portlanders' minds right now, mm-hmm. Just especially with the recent sort of spree of deaths and injuries and carnage, if that's an okay word to use, that we've experienced over a relatively short period of time for 2015. So
I would be interested to see the number of car deaths over the same period of time.
Yeah.
If that.
I should actually look that up, because that would be a great.
Wouldn't that be interesting? And when's the last time you heard about? I don't watch the evening news, so I'm sure mm-hmm. that happens every night.
Right. And actually, car crashes actually over the past, 10 years have actually decreased
mm-hmm.
Per capita. Mm-hmm.
And I know
and
deaths.
It's pedestrian deaths.
Yeah.
It's walking deaths that have actually been on the rise.
And I think that's just the part of the acceptance of that modality, is that those deaths are normalized instead of just like focused on, I guess, mm-hmm. or something like that, that inherent risk. So I think with driving too, like, even though you don't wear a helmet, that might be the one thing I can think of where if you do get in a wreck and you do get injured, that it's assumed like, oh yeah, well, you were driving, so obviously you can get hurt with that. Like, so we're looking at extreme sports in that category. Perhaps driving is our most popular extreme sport.
That's right.
Not to go out there. I don't know. I do drive.
Yeah, I mean, but it's like it's a tool.
The modality, exactly. So I always like to think of it like, well, when I'm driving, I'm a driver. When I bike, I'm a bicyclist. And, you know, most days I'm, you know, six of the bike and one of the car, you know, week by week. But it's always trying to, like, bring it back to the people and bring it back to, like, oh, I'm still Guthrie no matter what I happen to be on. And that's really hard to communicate to somebody who's trying to kill you as they're taking a left turn on Williams or something like that. So,
So how do you, because you see a lot of families, you know, and obviously safety is a big concern. How do you have, what kinds of safety conversations do you have with families and what concerns do you hear at Clever?
I definitely get the, which is the safest helmet question on a fairly regular basis. And I'm like, well, whichever one they're going to wear and fits, honestly, like whichever one they like, same with adults, because if you don't like it, it doesn't fit well, it's uncomfortable, like you're not going to wear it. So that's the least safe, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
But honestly, they all undergo the same tests, right? Which are a bit odd. Like they basically drop the helmet on the top of it and test its abilities in withstanding that kind of impact, which I don't know if any of you have either have crashed your bicycle, but I have never crashed my bicycle landing directly on the top of my head.
No.
But
that would be amazing.
Gold star.
I know, right? Right? That would be,
it's like I went
really beautiful. Like Superman doing a swan dive into a pool. Actually the last time I crashed my bike, my helmet saved my glasses.
Nice.
Glasses are very expensive. It did not save my face, but I was fine.
Couple weeks, skin heals.
Was it a Portland crash or was it outside of the city here?
Oh, it was in Portland. I was riding home from work. I remember it was like New Year's Day or some near holiday. It was really cold, and all I could think of was that I really wanted a hot toddy when I got home. And I was riding kind of through near Lloyd Center Mall, and just suddenly I was on the pavement. And I don't know really what happened, except that when I came to, a homeless man said, "I can't help you, honey," and kept walking. And I was like, "I'm going to die here. Huh. This is terrible. I'm going to die here." But I was fine. Some people ran and were like, "Oh no, did a car hit you?" And I'm like, no, I don't know what happened. Like my front wheel froze up, I'm pretty sure, and threw me off my bike. So I think that something got sucked in between my front wheel and my fender, and my fork was like all kinds of mangled. And they called my girlfriend and she came and picked me up and brought me to the hospital because they were like, "Oh, we're going to call you an ambulance." And I'm like, "I can't afford an ambulance, please. Thank you." Mm-hmm. So, you know, typical, terrible Portland. This is what happens when you're on a bicycle and you get into an accident. You're not on a car.
Yeah.
Where, like, a car, you have insurance and you're like, "Yeah, sure, take me to the hospital, do whatever the hell you need to do." Mm-hmm. You're on a bicycle, you're not insured. Even though I had health insurance, but I was like, even with that, it's not going to be great.
And that's I'd seen an article semi-recently that had talked about the best way to get insurance on a bicycle is to actually purchase a junker, insure that, and then it covers you for personal if you're riding your bicycle, or there's some sort of weird way you can do that. So I guess aside from bicycle-specific insurance, the best way is to buy a $500 car, let it sit somewhere, and then purchase insurance on that.
But so you're saying, like, my car insurance could cover me in the incident of me hurting myself on my bicycle, but no cars involved?
I would need to double check it again, but that seemed like the gist of what I had been reading. And so it was sort of, I believe it might have been on Bike Portland about 8 or 9 months ago.
Okay. So you purchased some special personal injury protection or something?
Something like that. About like that homogeneity of the vehicle makes it easier to insure something subsidiary to it or something like that.
Even if I'm nowhere near it.
Exactly. You just have to say I was in my car, but then I happened to land on my bicycle as I fell out of the window of my car.
I'm trying to unclip my bicycle helmet when I'm going to the hospital.
Exactly. Can you please take me to the hospital?
Do you see these seatbelt bruises?
Actually, I saw a really sort of neat thing the other evening. Living just up on Going Streets, one of our bicycle highways, if you will, in Portland, and somebody had a wreck actually just on our corner, and the person in question was actually quite inebriated But the police bureau actually brought the bicycle back to his house. Oh. So I was like, huh, that's a first one. I didn't have my phone, or I would have said thank you to PPB on that one. But I just...
Well, you're saying it now.
You
yeah,
have time.
Thank you, PPB. So yeah, that was sort of new for me. I was like, wow, that's kind of nice. The officer, you know, despite this person having the choice of an ambulance ride or ride to jail for having a can of Montucky on him. But
that can't get you drunk.
Oh, well, it was the other six that he had already had, or the other five, I guess, in that case. But yes, don't drink and bike, or do, but don't
crash. Can we
crash.
Talk about Montucky? What's the deal with Montucky?
I don't know.
What is
it
Montucky?
It showed up.
Oh, it's this really beautiful can. It's blue with some sort of steed. Stallion.
It's Montana.
It's like the cheap beer of Montana.
Yeah, or it's like the new PBR is the new Rolling Rock is the new whatever.
It's the next in the
yeah.
succession. Of
exactly.
It's at the co-op on Alberta, so it must be in.
Beautiful.
You can get it at most bars now. It comes in a tall can. It's not very good. Whatever you're drinking is much better than Montucky.
Speaking of which,
I don't even know what you're drinking, but it's better than Montucky.
So speaking of what we're drinking, we should mention...
Can we say thank you to someone?
We can say thank you to someone. Beer Mongers, which is our beverage sponsor for today, or our beverage... I'm not sure. Aaron said to go light on this one, but thank you. They're doing a wonderful job here. I'm drinking a wonderful Three Creeks Brewing Company from... Sisters, Oregon. I've got their Raptor Rye IPA, which is quite a fantastic IPA, if I might say so myself. What have you got over there, Steph?
I've got the Spica Pilsner from Ecliptic
mm-hmm.
Brewing.
Oh, you know those guys? They're up on
North
Mississippi.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty
and
rad. And I am having the Bull Run Cider. It's a Gravenstein single varietal medium dry cider. I don't know where these guys are, but it's delicious. I'm going to tell you momentarily. Forest Grove.
Oh, really?
Oh, the Grove.
My
really?
Favorite.
Wow. Does it have an established date on it or anything like that?
It does not, but you have the internet.
I do. I'm just curious because I went to college there and I had never heard a whim of it. So.
Well, maybe they're new.
We'll see. We'll
Who
find
knows?
Out on the internet here.
They know how to make cider.
Speaking of North Mississippi, I had noticed that you are the... trivia champion of North Portland history facts.
Oh,
should I even
you
go
read,
there?
You read my bio.
I did.
Todd wrote that, or Dean wrote that? I can't remember. I wrote the rest of the bios, but I can't write my own.
Is there any interesting tidbits you'd like to share with the audience?
Oh, that's a good question. It's usually Tuesday nights. I go to the Barlow Tavern, which is a really classy establishment. It used to be an old man bar, and now it's owned by some people that own another bar. I don't know. That's really informative. I think Vendetta, maybe.
Okay.
I'm just making things up now.
We'll believe you.
Thank you. Thank you.
We will not.
I am
look
not
at the
making
internets.
Things up.
Nope.
Facts. I don't have any right now.
Okay. I know it's
Man,
like to
is,
put you on the spot.
You should have asked me this in advance, and I would have brought some really great Trivial Pursuit
gotcha.
Bullshit. Okay, wait. Canada. How do you feel about Canada?
I like Canada.
Okay, lovely. What is the largest by landmass province in Canada? Or land area?
The Yukon Territory?
Nova Scotia?
If I'm...
No, neither is correct.
Oh,
you
want to
try again? There are only like 10 more provinces to choose from.
Our listeners in Canada are banging.
They're
on
like,
their,
come on,
on their right
come
now.
On! I know exactly the answer.
It's Alberta? No,
no.
I'm out.
It's
I'm
Quebec.
Fresh out. Oh, okay.
Really?
Yeah. It's actually pretty big up there. Anyways, what is the largest province by population?
BC. No, wait.
Do you have a guess?
I don't.
I already.
You already blew your guess.
Yep, exactly.
And it wasn't correct. So maybe you should try.
I'm going with Quebec again.
Very close. Look to the west. Do you know which province that
no.
is?
No.
Well, so
like that American.
Because
like,
Toronto is like a really huge city, Ontario is the biggest province by population.
Nice.
I don't know. Have you guys driven through up there? It's really beautiful.
I've
Ontario
not.
Is like... Perfect.
I've been wanting to bike through for a while, but I've not had a chance to yet.
You should do it in the fall. But fall comes earlier there because it's north, you know.
So have you biked through?
No, but I've driven. I wasn't wearing a helmet.
So are you from Canada or
I
just spend
no,
a lot of
I'm
time
not.
In?
Oh, okay. I just maybe I'm a, I don't know how you would say that, like a Francophile, but for Canada. Okay. Anyways, I think Canada's pretty rad.
Yeah.
No, my wife and I drove through Canada like many, many years ago. We drove from Oregon to Maine and then back again.
Not
in quick succession, but
was there a destination in mind? Or
yeah, so we lived in Maine for the summer, which was pretty cool.
Okay. So there and then back.
So there, yeah, just a loop. We did the U.S. there and then Canada on the way back.
Hmm.
Yeah,
along the way, have you done any bike tours? Have you done any bike tours?
I like bicycling. No, not really. Not long ones. Like weekend trips, but nothing long and shower free.
Because I have to say, like, every time I'm in a car going any distance, it's like, you know, I'm looking at the shoulder. Like, how bikeable would this be? Is it pretty?
Yeah, when I was at the coast and I saw all these people riding, I'm like, I don't really want to ride my bike out here. I'd rather go, like, out in the boondocks.
Just because of the weather, or just
because of the shoulder, and there's so much traffic.
Yep.
There's a lot of traffic, and a lot of people that don't know the area. Right. And I feel like people when they're driving and they don't know the area are really bad drivers.
Where did
because they're like, look at that, and then they veer off into the shoulder.
Where did you visit on the coast most recently? We were talking before the show here about how Eva has never seen a sunshine on the coast. they do exist.
I mean, maybe like a single ray or
something,
but, you know,
peeping
not like
the
a whole beautiful day. Rockaway Beach, which is like really classy. I don't know if y'all know how classy Rockaway is. And then like we went to Manzanita for dinner. And then Niakani Beach for a nice long walk in the light rain, which I love. Mm-hmm. I kind of miss the rain, you know?
Yeah.
It's 95 degrees here.
We got lucky last night, though. There was a bit of a sprinkle.
Just a little bit.
10 minutes of rain, and then it was like, nope, just kidding. It's still July.
Fooled you.
Yep. I guess we didn't have to water the garden that morning.
Yeah. But that evening, maybe you...
Oh, yes. Yes. We were back on the water brigade. So in terms of, and I guess we're segueing back or forward or somewhat to the side here again, I was sort of curious. So we had briefly touched there on like the family style bicycles. Do you know, or I guess, how did you build those partnerships? Because before Metrofeets and before a lot of that became really popular here in town, they're doing it overseas. And so was there sort of a process that Clever had gone through to get those sort of back into the U.S. or friends
friends? I like your tangential segue.
Thank you.
Not to be confused with the vehicle that... Has anybody ever driven a Segway, by the way?
I've not.
No.
I have this weird desire to drive a Segway, even though they're the most ridiculous, ridiculous vehicle around. Anyways, that's my tangential segue. Bachfeet's importation subject. That's a good question. I guess we formed a relationship. So honestly, I wasn't there at the very beginning.
Okay.
But Bachfeet's were the product.
Yep.
Right? Dean was like putting them together in the basement.
Okay.
At Clever years ago, 2008, 2007, something like that. And that was like, you couldn't get them. You couldn't get a cargo bike. And so they were bringing them in from Europe through Work Cycles, I believe, or through Azor. They tried to have this relationship with this sketchy guy in Florida, and it didn't really work out in all sorts of ways. Mm-hmm. But, I think that was what got the whole boat rolling, right? The ball rolling.
And those are some durable bikes.
And we see them on the third, fourth owner now, and they're still going. And maybe you've seen the Old Town Pizza guys.
So
they ride the crap out of those things, and I'm just like, oh my god, that's still rolling.
I can actually attest to that because our shop is the one that fixes it when they break them. They try their best.
Good job. Thank you.
Yeah.
By the way, because you know they're at this point where it's like everything needs to be replaced.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, for sure. And I mean, like Old Town Pizza, to their credit, like in terms of if you're talking about a bicycle focused business in terms of a delivery method, like they get it. They're like,
yeah.
I mean, back, I think it was the model that we repair from them is from 2007, 2008,
yeah.
maybe.
Yeah. So they were originals.
Oh, they were. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, they come in and we like wrestle them up onto our repair stand, and to their credit, they don't break the things that, I guess don't break, but every now and then the, delivery person comes in and is like, hey, yeah, it's doing a little funky thing again. So we're like, yeah. All right, bring it on over.
Yeah.
But they give us pizza from time to time. So I think it works out.
Nice.
They have brewing now too.
Oh, yeah.
You should have them branch out from the pizza.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, on last episode we had the, I believe it was Shanghai IPA from Old Town Brewing here on the show.
There you go.
So
perfect. I don't think I've ever had their beer. Although maybe I have, because I do remember going to their North Portland location and fixing something for them. And they're
for sure. Yeah, they've got their two locations, Old Town Pizzas, or the one downtown, and Old Town Brewing's the one up in North Portland. So.
Yeah.
Nice folks over there.
For sure. It's like they sponsored us or something. But they didn't.
Next time.
They didn't. I know.
Yeah.
So what have you learned since being an owner? Like, what lessons have you learned? And what...
Okay. I'm going to get myself into trouble and say everyone's faking it. You know, owning a business is kind of like you are just kind of making it work and figuring it out as you go to a certain degree. I mean, definitely like we have things together pretty well, but owning a business is not like, oh yeah, plug and play. It's not like owning a franchise. And I don't even know what owning a franchise is like, but I figure it's like you have one supplier and you have advertising from the parent company and you just sort of like keep it running. We're not really like that. And I feel like business is this constant, it's constantly changing, right? And you're trying to stay ahead of the curve and trying to figure out how that works. And like, oh, hey, I have all this extra stock. What are we going to do? Mm-hmm. And we've got all these bills due. Oh crap. You know, like, do we have a sale? REI is like, whoa, we have a sale every 6 months on the dot because they've got an oiled machine with who knows how many people working for them, right? We're not to that point. They have a cushion. I don't know what kind of cushion. It's like they have an endowment or something.
They must have a good cushion because they do have a no chase policy. So
what does that mean?
Exactly. So I'm like,
well, that's rational.
I guess I'm like speaking from Old Town. And we have had it happen before. Like Evan will like run out the door and be like, "Yeah, would actually like our three pumps back that you put in your jacket."
Oh,
and so I mean, I guess on the small business perspective of things, if you can have a no chase policy, you've got it made.
Well, it might be more of a liability thing. Than a money
thing. I guess I could see that.
I would imagine you don't really want your employees getting shot or like beaten up if they go run after somebody.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I don't encourage my staff to like go run after thieves, but just give them a good stare down and make them not steal anything in the first place.
Kill them with kindness.
So how do you make those? I mean, sorry, not to take us away from the
going
death,
back to what I was asking.
Like, how do you make those decisions? Do you know? Do the owners get together and decide? Like, are we having a sale?
Yeah, I mean, we try to meet. We have a meeting every Thursday morning, and we talk about things.
What kinds of things do you talk about?
Sometimes we talk about what we drank the night before. Sometimes we talk about business. We talk about whatever problems are happening. You know, we try to solve these problems whenever possible. But yeah, we talk about, you know, Dean is sort of the guru of marketing and telling the people through email or through Facebook or whatever, like what's new and exciting. Todd's really good at writing blog posts about like, here are the new products that are more awesome than you could ever imagine. Check them out. We have them now. So that's a certain amount of like trying to draw buzz around business. But then there's also, yeah, like what are we doing? Do we need to post more on Instagram? Do we need to like get onto Pinterest? Because we were doing that for a while and nobody really wanted to do it. And so now maybe we should get back on that.
Huh.
We talk about things like that. I mean, like fairly mundane but important things. And honestly, sales are kind of like, well, let's come up with a good idea and then make it happen.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes people bite and sometimes we get nothing and we're like, well, that didn't work. Try again.
In terms of the, I guess, not like necessarily strictly fake it till you make it. So if you've not visited Clever Cycles website, it is absolutely gorgeous. There's a really sensible order and layout to the things. And do you folks do a lot of online sales as well? Because I know you have the wheel building service. And for a lot of shops in town, there's a lot of places you can go to have a wheel built.
Sure.
There's few places you can go to have a wheel built really, really well. And I feel like Clever Cycles is definitely one of them. Do you
see
that uptick there for the website?
Well, we do sell some stuff online. It's sort of an odd hodgepodge of items that we sell online. It's like things you can't get anywhere else, or for some reason or another, we have the best price, or we have it all together. I am a very particular person, so I say things like, we don't have it together. But yeah, I mean, like, our website looks pretty good, and we work at it, and we keep it up. But I always think things can be better.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, it's good not to sit on your laurels and let things be. So the website definitely is helpful, maybe more for local customers to look and see, hey, what is your product assortment? What does that look like? I mean, I will tell you, we have 7,000 products in our system, and not even one-tenth of those are on the website, I think.
Oh, yeah.
So there are plenty of things that you don't see there.
Wow.
Yep.
That I can get, or we can get. We have, gosh, I don't know how many suppliers we have, but a lot.
Mm-hmm. Clever Cycles is also kind of that place where if you're trying to track something down in town, I know we call you like every then and there. So we had like a Molten in from Britain that had this very specific wheel standard. And the other neat thing,
and we had the tire.
Exactly. Yeah. It's so
you're welcome.
Cool.
You know this.
I appreciate it highly. So, you know, I mean, there's a couple places in town. They're like, oh yeah, these folks have that. But, Clever is also one of these sort of enigmas of places where if you need that one really weird part, they can usually find it, which is a very nice thing to have, especially when you're a smaller shop or a shop that's more focused on different things, to have that resource. So,
yeah, I think going back to your camaraderie comment, we definitely, bike shops call each other and say, hey, do you have this in stock? And either somebody runs over there and grabs it, or they send the customer over there to buy it. You know, definitely River City is really awesome with us. If we ever need a part for a repair and they have it in stock, they give us a really good price. And, I love that about them. And they send us business when they don't have a cargo bike or a kid seat or something of that nature. And we send people there when they want a flat bar carbon road bike. And we're like, what's that? We don't have a scale in the shop, which is the other funny thing about Clever is people are always asking how much it weighs. And I just kind of
like, more than you'd think.
Pick it up.
How many gallons of water can you carry?
Is there an uptick for the disaster relief trials each year or something like that?
No. I want the heaviest bicycle you have. I'm doing the DRT. I don't know. How is that happening this year? I hear Mike Cobb's kind of spearheading that project.
Yeah, it was, it's coming together. It was on our announcements for last week. And
it's in October.
That is all I know at this point. I've known about it the last couple years.
Details are foggy.
Yeah, well, I mean, hey, we're in July. We've got a couple of months to figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I based on the previous years, I'd say it's probably coming together fantastically. It's always been a good event. Yeah. And for the cargo bike side of things, I'd always wondered, if there's people who, for some reason, they've done every other Century or Criterion or whatnot, and they're like, you know what, I think I need to put the DRT in my belt. I'm just going to head over to Clever Cycles or something.
I haven't run into that person yet.
Okay.
They're probably out there, and if they're listening, come on down. I will hook you up. We're going to get you a brand new Extra Cycle Edgerunner 30D. It's like really beautiful, 30 gears, hydraulic disc brakes. It's like perfect for the project. And I think they list their weights on their website.
Oh, nice.
Nice. So I don't have to guess.
So speaking of cargo bikes on your blog,
the dues. So
maybe you want one.
I'll admit to some covetousness.
Yeah.
So can you explain, like, what...
It's well-founded.
Please describe its awesomeness, because I'm still trying to put my mind around just how that works.
It's kind of like the Bullet, but rides like butter.
Ooh.
Not to say the Bullet isn't a great product, but I think the Dews is better.
And doesn't it fold?
It doesn't fold, but it comes apart. Uh-huh. So that it's two pieces, sort of like a rear end and a front end, and connected in the middle, basically with two through axles, like off of a really fancy mountain bike. So if you need to put it in your car, or if we need to pack it up and ship to you in Florida, this makes it a little more convenient. And really, it just rides well. I mean, honestly, like, cargo bikes, sure, blah, 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 components, blah, blah, blah. But, like, how does it ride? Mm-hmm. And a lot of people never get the chance to go to a place where they can try more than one, if any, cargo bikes. Right? Portland is this odd mecca where we have a few cargo bike shops. And you can try six different varietals of cargo bikes, right? That doesn't happen elsewhere, I don't think.
Is it also electric assist, similar to some of the Bullet systems?
You can outfit it. We have a couple outfitted with Bionic system, which is pretty rad. We're talking about doing a mid-drive system in the future.
So like a Bosch center drive, or?
Not necessarily that, because that requires changes to the frame.
Yep.
I don't actually understand the words that are coming. Oh.
These are
right
things
now.
Are happening.
Things are.
So the Bosch mid-drive is a German thing, which is pretty incredible. Extra Cycle is using it on their new electric bikes, and they have to reshape the frame because essentially where the cranks go into the frame, the bottom bracket isn't actually a bottom bracket. It's a whole motor assembly. And so they need to fit that. It's kind of like your transmission in your car, right? You put it up on the jack and stick that transmission in there.
Mm-hmm.
And so the frame has to be specially designed to work with this. Sure. So it's not an add-on product.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not necessarily available with the Dews. But there are other systems that work with your existing bottom bracket and just clamp on there, and then you have a battery somewhere and it works like magic. And it's feels more normal because you're just pedaling like a regular bicycle. I don't know if you've ever ridden an electric bike, but
no,
they all feel a little different. You know, you just think, oh, it's like a car, but all cars drive a little bit differently,
yep.
Right? Mm-hmm. There's front-wheel drive, there's rear-wheel drive, there's four-wheel drive, there's all-wheel drive. I don't even know. Somebody'll tell me about that later. I have a brother-in-law who's a mechanic. He will tell me.
He'll listen to this and he was like, you know what you should have said.
You know, I know about all-wheel drive. But the mid-drive is cool because it pushes your pedals like you. Right, instead of pushing your wheel, which can feel different,
yep.
For sure.
Mm-hmm.
So Stoke Muggy is something we sell that's a mid-drive, but it's like super-duper powerful and ridiculous and awesome, but doesn't necessarily fit on everything.
For the e-conversions or the upgrades that you do, what percentage do you find of folks that are going for that? Because, I mean, Portland's relatively flat. We've seen... at least for our shop, a lot of people, if you're in Seattle or San Francisco, you're like, yeah, total sense. That mm-hmm. makes a lot of it. But there are only several hilly areas in town.
Mm-hmm.
So is that mainly the person you were mentioning earlier that is concerned with the hills that's going to go for that? Or is it a decent percentage of the things that you put out of the shop?
It depends on the person, really. I think there's been a lot of uptick in interest, at least for electric bikes, for cargo bikes, mm-hmm. and for regular bikes. Definitely more and more people are coming in just looking for regular electric bikes.
Mm-hmm.
With cargo bikes, honestly, if you're carrying a lot of stuff, even flat ground can be daunting.
Yep.
You've got three kids and stuff. Electric is pretty rad. It
yep.
will make you want to ride your bike more. So we encourage people to try it, and whether or not their budget allows usually determines whether or not they want to go with that. You know, is it a car replacement? Is it more like I want to get fit and ride the kids to school every so often? Mm-hmm. It depends on the audience that you're working with. So I don't know if I can give you a percentage,
mm-hmm.
but I would say a lot of people are interested in it.
Okay.
For sure. And it's also something you can add on after the fact. Like, if your budget doesn't allow this year, you buy the bike this year, mm-hmm. you buy the electric assist next year.
Mm-hmm.
And then your life is just a song.
Nice.
After that.
Do most people approach it from that economic standpoint, like the deciding factor? I mean, like, oftentimes it does just come down to, like, can I afford it? Can I not?
Sure.
Yes or no. But in terms of people being interested in that, do you find that the crucial decision is mostly finances, or is it more like they want to have something as a car replacement or something like that?
It depends on the person.
Okay.
Definitely, you put them on a bike that costs $1,500 and a bike that costs $2,000, mm-hmm. and they feel mostly the same. They're going to buy the $1,500 bike.
Yeah.
Some people have more money and they're able to just say, I like the looks of this and it costs $400 more and I liked it a little bit better. I'm going to buy that.
Mm-hmm.
Great. Mm-hmm. I do think that finances are often an issue,
yeah.
although then on the other hand, you try something and you love it. Usually you find a way to make it work.
Mm-hmm.
I feel that way with myself.
Mm-hmm.
If I try something really nice, I'm just like, oh, I'm going to save up for that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I always, something I tell folks a lot is like, it doesn't matter, because people often come into our shop looking for like a bicycle, you know, and what I tell them is like, if it's a $50 bike and you like riding it, great. If it's a $1,500 bike and you like riding it better than anything else you've tried, great. Like, you're going to ride the bike that you feel comfortable riding. Mm-hmm. And so in terms of getting on it, that's a sensible investment at almost any price tier.
Yeah.
It's just something that feels good to ride. Yeah, exactly.
I have a small story and then I have a question. My small story related, I had a friend who was an over-the-road trucker for about a decade, and then he had an unfortunate incident with a snowplow, and so that ended.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I know. It was a bummer. He's fine.
That's good.
But, you know, spoiler alert, he's great. But so we went afterwards. He was like, well, I'm in Portland now. I'd like to get a bicycle. So we went to a community cycling center because I was like, we will find you the bicycle. And Joey French, who at that point was working at a bike shop, mm-hmm. happened to be like coming in at the same time that we did. It's like, great, because I know nothing about mechanics. Please help. And we found it was like this beautiful specialized crossroads like hybrid. And he tooled it around and he was like, great. And he was like, it was like $100 more than he was planning to go. And I was like, look, I will get you the lights and the lock and the helmet. Like, this is your bicycle. It's $495, but it is like, it is your bicycle. And we went down the street to Random Order Coffee House for some celebratory yep. pie afterwards.
Yeah.
And he was like, well, you know, it was more money than I was planning to spend. I did spend $100,000 on gas last year.
Like, that's incredible.
It's all perspective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
My question related to financing. Clever Cycles has a financing program. Do you know?
Why,
not?
Yes.
How
interesting,
do you guys
you should
decide
ask.
That? And how has it been going?
So we offer financing if you spend over... I'm going to try to get this right. Over $1,500, you get 6 months free financing, and over $3,000, you get 12 months free financing. And we're just working with a company that's doing this. We pay larger finance charges on the purchase. It's sort of like a bank. Yeah. It's mm-hmm. called Synchrony. I honestly don't really know. They're sort of like they're a credit card company, mm-hmm. basically. So we figured, hey, we're selling bikes that cost $4,000 and $6,000. Like, maybe this would be a good way to help people get into that, right? They do it with cars. 72 months free financing. I don't even know. I figure, you know, if you spread it out over 12 months, sometimes it feels a little more digestible.
Yeah.
And we've definitely had a few people bite on that. Cargo bikes for sure, a couple of people buying Bromptons, which can hit close to $2,000. And you know, if you pay it off within that time period, you don't it's not like there are any catches. It's just make sure you pay it off before the end of the 6 or the 12 months, because otherwise they come with their 30% mm-hmm. interest rate and they
so
say, oh,
yeah.
you owe all this money. And
that's
like,
up to the card company, not necessarily Clever Cycles.
Yeah, it's not us.
Okay.
I mean, we tell you, hey, pay your bills,
yeah.
pay this off, mm-hmm. and you'll be great. We'll all be happy.
Nice.
you know, I don't want to get people into like financial difficulties right. because they can't afford a bicycle. Like mm-hmm. we don't want you buying a bike you can't afford. Mm-hmm. Right.
How has that process been for the people who have taken advantage of it?
We had somebody recently who took advantage of it and now they're buying another bike. They paid it off. They're buying another bike. So some people, that's how they work. That's how their brain works. Some people save up in advance. Some people would rather have it now and pay over time. I mean, mm-hmm. that's kind of the American way, right?
Mm-hmm.
So
more utility or less. Depends on how you look at it.
I just carry around a wad of 100s in my pocket at all times. My pockets aren't very big.
What bikes are in your garage?
Oh, I don't have a garage.
Well, you're
but I have proverbial. I have a basement. Mm-hmm. We had to buy a house because I had too many bicycles in our apartment, right? Maybe we all have this problem. Maybe not. Maybe you guys are very, like, leave these little lives with one bicycle, and it's a wonderful bicycle, right? Good for you.
I'm only at one bike because I told myself the next bike I buy is going to be a freaking good one. So
yeah.
That's a good way to discourage those impulse purchases.
Yeah. I finally gave myself a really nice bicycle. It's a Soma Mixte with a full Ultegra drivetrain, Dura-Ace down tube shifters. I mean, it's like blingy. Like, I don't buy myself nice things. And this thing's rad. It's like comfortable and fast. I love passing people wearing a dress and just being like, I have down tube shifters and you have STI levers and spandex. And
it's like, see? But does it have a name?
No.
Do you name your bicycles?
No, I don't. Maybe I should.
I don't know. I mean, it seems to be working out well for you. So you got it.
I think it's a woman, but I'm not sure of her name. Mm-hmm. I'll think about
Maybe
that.
Maybe she'll tell you in time.
Maud. Something old-timey and kind of, I don't know. I have chickens and their names are all kind of Carla and Maxine and, mm-hmm. George Elliott and...
Oh, nice.
Yeah?
My bike's name is George.
Oh, George.
George Song.
Play bien ça.
No way.
I have a few other bicycles. I'm going to try to think of all of them. I have a Bridgestone MB2.
Nice.
It's nice. It's a little, it can get a little noodly when you weigh it down. Mm-hmm. But anybody listening is going to be really jealous because my friend Jonathan just left it for me on my back porch one day.
Oh, wow.
Did he mean to?
Yes. He's a wonderful guy. He's his son. This was his son's bike when his son was like 14 or something. Jonathan's in his 60s. Hmm. And his son grew out of it, and Jonathan's had this bike for years and years, and he's like, what am I going to do with this? It's like, he's 6'3", and I'm 5'7". He's like, this is useless to me. Here, have this. So I fix it up. It's pretty fun. But I'm riding the Mixte a lot. Maud. I'm going to call her Maud.
You heard it here first. Breaking news.
Yeah. I have a 70 Schwinn Suburban that I bought in Walla Walla for $10.
Nice.
That I love. And I keep threatening to get rid of it, and I keep not getting rid of it.
Is it like the bike that
it lives in the yard?
Visit town?
Honestly, my friends don't ever come to visit me. Friends come visit me. I'm from New York, and people, I don't know, mm-hmm. people don't visit me.
Huh.
I'm so sad now.
There's an Amtrak.
And it only takes 9 days.
I know. It only takes 3.
Oh, does it?
Yeah.
Really, across the country?
Yeah.
But flying is fairly cheap. And meh. Yeah, okay.
Not nearly as interesting.
But it's really fun when you fly into the city.
That's true. Yeah.
That's like my favorite part. Mm-hmm. When you come in over Mount Hood,
mm-hmm.
and you're like, oh, look, no snow.
That glacier. Glacier.
Why is there no water in that lake? Other bicycles. I have a kind of a touring bike that doesn't have any wheels currently, and then I have a carbon road bike that I've tried
it's
to sell.
Like a tour of the imagination
that I've tried to sell a few times, and people don't want it. Anybody out there want a 54-centimeter Cannondale, like 105 components? I will take offers.
Nice.
It's very nice. Well tuned by a professional bike mechanic.
Did you, so for the REI portion of it, did you go through Barnett or did you just?
I'm self-taught.
Nice. Autodidactic.
No, I guess I just learned by doing and asking a lot of questions and reading books whenever possible on the internet and just sort of like immersing myself in things and pretending that I knew what I was doing until I knew what I was doing.
Nice. Sheldon Brown was kind of like in the back pocket there for a couple of years.
Sheldon has some interesting tidbits for sure. He's not always the most useful.
Yep.
More useful at Clever Cycles than anywhere else.
Yeah.
I think for what is this obscure tire size that's only available on a Molten?
I felt so bad, so I called them actually because I was like, well, they're still a distributor for Molten. And I just felt so horrible because the gal on the phone said, well, if Sheldon was here, he would have known. And I'm just like, I'm so sorry.
I'm so like, sorry
I'll ask, I will hang up. I will ask a different question. I apologize. I will call Clever Cycles now.
I have a funny story about Harris Cyclery, which is the shop where Sheldon used to work when he was alive. He was like the web guy, and I guess he just hung out in the basement and did web stuff. And I have a friend, Elton, who works there, who's like the Brompton guy and guru. And you should ask him how many bikes he has, because I'm sure the number is over 10. And they're all like really beautiful. Mm. Anyways, Elton, I went for a bike ride with my wife and Elton and his wife, Deborah, and we were coming back into town after a bike ride. We were driving because you drive to go bike riding in outside of Boston. And everyone had to pee. And we were going by Harris and Elton's like, nope, we're not stopping there to pee. And I'm like, what? Why not? He's like, I don't think the bathroom's been clean since before Sheldon died. And I was
You're like, well,
I was like, okay, I'm going to hold it. Because it's been some years.
Yeah. I guess maybe it's just a point of reference. Like there's, you know, there's Jesus and then there's Sheldon.
Right.
And there's,
right.
there's Pose 80 and
AS. AS and BS. I like these acronyms that happen.
I used to say like because I lived in New York City for a couple of years, but I lived there what I call like BSK before Sadiq Khan, you know, and going there, 10 years plus after Sadiq Khan, ASK, was like, it's a whole new world.
Hmm.
Things change.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So you had grown up in, was it upstate New York? Was there a lot of love for cycling that was sort of cultured at that age, or did you come into bicycling a little bit later in life?
I was born riding a bicycle.
On a bicycle. Nice.
Yeah. No, I started riding, I don't know how old I was, but I definitely, bicycles were my freedom.
Mm-hmm.
Like I'm sure plenty of small children felt that way.
Mm-hmm.
At least people that didn't grow up in scary cities where their parents were like, stranger danger and no riding out there and whatever. But I was given free rein, and all summer basically I was on a bicycle. And I feel like I rode my bike barefoot a lot, which now I think about and I'm like, that's really uncomfortable. Did you guys ride your bikes barefoot when you were little?
Yeah.
And do you think about it now?
Well, now I wear flip-flops, so I've only slightly,
upgraded.
There's
the
like
chain.
A layer.
There's a barrier.
I wear flip-flops.
Yeah.
There's a layer in there.
Mm-hmm.
I had a bike called Tropical Moves, and it was amazing. It was purple with white splatter paint. It was a single speed coaster brake, and it came with an orange fanny pack on the handlebars. It was like fanny pack handlebar bag. That thing probably had like 20,000 miles on it by the time I was done with it. Like I wore through tires and
nice. Was it it was pedal back brake or nice?
Classy. Nice. I think it was a Murray. I don't really know. Mm-hmm. It was some Kmart, Caldors, James Way. I don't know where it came from, but definitely not a bike shop. But it worked. It
showed up on the porch one day and you're like, I'm going to ride this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That thing was rad.
Nice.
Do you remember a bike that you have fond memories for?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
How about you?
Yeah. I grew up in Eastern Oregon, which is a pretty rural part of the state as well.
Are you going to tell me where?
Yeah, if you'd like. So I was born in Enterprise, Oregon, and grew up in a little bit of Joseph, a little bit of Lostine, a bit of Enterprise, before spending roughly half my life on the west side of the state, as we call it. But I had this Mongoose, which was just fantastic. And it was a pedal back, and on the rural roads of Eastern Oregon was where I basically spent most of my time riding up and down the street and around and everywhere else. So that was a good bike to me. I treated it pretty well until I accidentally hid it under my friend's mother's van because I wasn't supposed to be at his house. Little did I know, sometimes people hop in vans without checking behind the rear wheel. And that bike was gone, but it was shortly replaced by another pretty fun bike. So nice. Definitely grew up riding as well.
Poor Mongoose.
I know. Yeah. They get a bad rap, those Mongooses.
BM?
Oh, I don't even remember.
That's an unfortunate acronym, actually. AM. We're in the AM period now.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
I married my bicycle in 2005. It's a Schwinn Prelude. My dad walked me down the
aisle.
What
was the occasion?
It was beautiful. It was the Multnomah County Bike Fair.
Okay.
And so they had a Marry Your Bike booth. And I was like, well, if you're going to marry your bike, you should marry your bike. Like, there should be invitations and, like, you wear a dress and you have a veil. And, yeah, my dad walked me down the aisle and we had, you know.
This is impressive.
I need to learn more about this.
Is there photographic evidence?
Oh, yeah. Jonathan Mouse, actually. That's how I met him. He took pictures.
Oh,
we had
great.
A reception afterwards. Yeah. It was good times.
Is that a yearly event or is that just sort of a one-time thing?
It was for a number of years, and I don't know if anyone for the MCBF, if they still do.
I feel like
do you have to divorce your bicycle to marry another one?
Well,
polyamorous relationships.
There was
cool.
We called George questions. My mistress when I got George. My friend Matt created kind of a faux tabloid picture of like with a picture of the first time that I had taken George for a test run, and. Yeah, and so it was like, you know, activist scene on new bicycle, like, will her marriage survive?
I feel like that should be either a Afterpalooza or possibly even a Pedalpalooza for next year.
What, the
reunite,
open
reunification of bicycles or...
So progressive, this poor lady.
Oh, yes. The open marriage ride.
For sure, exactly.
Tell me about George.
Oh, George is a long-haul trucker. Oh. I've taken her to... Glacier National Park, and mm-hmm. we've probably seen about 40,000 miles together so far. So
nice.
It's a good relationship.
It is. It's a solid relationship. And, you know, Sparky is still... Sparky... Okay, this
there
is
are a lot of facial expressions happening.
I know
right
there are
that,
a lot of... It's
that,
mostly
that
guilt because
see.
I... Sparky's... the welds separated from the seat stay... After bike move 58, because I went beyond the 600-pound limit. So I just feel like this is a testament to my bad relationship with relationships. We don't need to go too far into it because then this becomes a therapy
okay.
session. But yeah,
so things are getting upsetting over here.
I look at Sparky and I'm like, I'm so sorry. So
yeah, what color is George?
George is blue.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah. Thank you for asking.
Yeah.
That was a good...
These are important things. Yeah. I don't want to bring things back away from turbulent times. Sparky.
It's like, but enough about Sparky. Let's talk about George.
Yeah. Let's talk about your current love affair. Yeah.
The bike that I'm going home with? Mm. Yeah.
So you mentioned Glacier. Is that like your favorite bike tour trip that you've gone on?
Oh, that's a good... It's the longest.
Okay.
Yeah. If you were... Have you considered a bike tour as one in your future?
My brother and I talked for years about riding across the U.S. And then he went and got married and had three children. And I'm like, okay.
Maybe
so it's
he wants
be like,
to get away.
It's going to be like 20 years before we can go on a bike ride together.
Hmm.
Well, maybe if they go to Clever, they could get the means to...
Maybe. Oh, my God. I don't think his wife is really into that. Hmm. Long haul, at least.
Sure.
So in terms of the short haul, is Clever still doing the bike hot tub?
Only under the radar.
Oh, okay.
We're no longer renting it.
Oh, okay.
Insurance apparently for hot water with an open flame. So
or for our listeners, what is?
Okay.
What will be?
Bike. Let me tell you about the bike hot tub. Dutch Tub is a product from Holland that we imported a couple years back. We brought in two hot tubs with a container of bikes from Holland, right? One was blue, one was green. And the idea was we would rent these items by bicycle, no less. So Mike Cobb spent several months crafting a trailer for us. It's basically like a chariot, right? You imagine some Roman movie with a handsome blonde fellow riding on the back. But instead it's a hot tub. And we would tow around this hot tub, bring it to your house. You make a fire in this little metal basket, and you fill the hot tub with water, and the water gets hot slowly but surely. And then you all jump in, and you have some whiskey, and it's a wonderful evening. So it turns out it's really a lot of work to do all of this, to deliver a bicycle, deliver a hot tub by bicycle. And it takes about 5 hours to get the water hot, and you know, you got to pay somebody to deliver it and pick it up and all of this and insurance, right? This is America, litigious society where you have to have insurance to do something like this. So it's run is over. So I'm sorry if you wanted the hot tub, but you should have jumped on the opportunity while you could have.
It's your own fault.
So if anybody would like to buy
the
hot tub, we have one for sale. So just email us info@clevercycles.com and we can talk because we still have one left. It's blue. Yay. I'm pretty sure. I'm actually not sure. I'm going to be 75% sure that it's blue. It's pretty fun, though. I mean, you know, you have a bunch of friends over and crack a couple bottles of beer and you fire up the hot tub. So, I don't know. Did you ever get to experience the hot tub?
I hadn't. I had seen it as a prize for Filmed by Bike a couple of years ago. So I was just curious to check up on that.
Sure. I saw the, like, pictures of Mike Cobb taking it up the Banks of Nonia Trail.
Oh, gosh. That seems like it might be outside the delivery zone.
He looked pretty happy.
I don't like to know what Mike Cobb does with things.
It went up there.
If something has weight limitations, he's tested them.
So I think that might lead us slowly and unsuredly, but nevertheless, to our closing for today. Thank you so much for being on the podcast this evening. It's been an absolute pleasure to have you. Is there anything you'd like to share with our listeners as sort of any last words of wisdom or such?
Goodbye.
Excellent. And where can we find you if we want to look up?
Several days a week, I'm at 9th and Hawthorne at Clever Cycles. And if I'm not there, my colleagues are there. Nina and Anna will get really excited about your flag helmet inquiries or any other such inquiries. We're available by telephone, 503-334-1560, or email info@clevercycles.com, because who uses a telephone? We'll see you there.
Fantastic. And I'd encourage all of our listeners to check it out. Really fantastic website. Again, thank you so much for being on the show this evening, Eva.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Are we ready for the outro here?
Yes.
Let's do it. Our website is thesprocketpodcast.com.
Email to thesprocketpodcast@gmail.com.
Call or text 503-847-9774.
Twitter @sprocketpodcast.
Thanks to Ryan J. Lane for our theme music.
Hurt Bird for our headline sounder.
And I'll start our thing over again here. Marcus Norman for graphic design.
And thanks to our sustaining donors.
Logan Smith, Johnny K, Shadowfoot.
Katrina Mellingard, Wayne Norman, Doug Robertson.
Ethan Georgie, Justin Martin, Eric Iverson.
Cameron Lien, Richard Wasensky, Tim Mooney.
Orange and Purple, Glenn Kubisch, Matt Kelly.
Jim Gooden, Eric Weiss, Doug Cohen Miller,
Todd Parker, Scott McAllister, Morgan, Chris Gonzalez,
Dan Gebhardt, Zoe Campagna, John Blood,
Allison Wiley, Andy Brunner, David Nose,
Lars V, Chris Smith, Christy Kaster,
Caleb Jenkinson, JP Cooley, Peanut Butter Jar Matt,
Patrick Archain, Gabriel Trainer, Sebastian Poole,
Marco Lowe, Rich Otterstrom, Andrew Alderson,
Drew the Welder. Who are you, Drew the Welder? You're awesome. Anna Krista Skukas,
John Wasserman, and Andre Johnson. Thank you all so much for listening. It's been a pleasure. And next week we will resume with the Sprocket Podcast.